Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. Don't stop. It'll soon be here. Edition, as Dave Lapham and I are joined by Bengals.com editor Jeff Hobson to peer into the future as we take a stab at forecasting what the Bengals will do in free agency and the draft. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Jenga. Like many families, we've played several board games in our house during the pandemic. We went through a Yahtzee phase and a Clue phase. There's been Monopoly and Masterpiece. But most recently, the pick has been Jenga. If you're not familiar with it, players take turns removing a wooden block from a tower constructed of 54 of them. Each block removed is then placed back on top of the tower, creating a progressively more unstable structure. The game ends when the tower tumbles, and the winner is the last person to remove and place a block successfully. It's not rocket science. It's recommended for ages 6 and up. But it's good old-fashioned fun. However, I do extend this warning. Don't play 14-year-old Sam Hoard for money. The kid's a Jenga savant. Now, let's get to football. We are 40 days away from the start of NFL free agency and 83 days away from the NFL draft. Who should the Bengals sign and who should they pick? I discussed those topics and answered your Twitter questions this week with my broadcast partner Dave Lapham and Bengals.com editor Jeff Butch Hobson. Today we are going to play general manager for a day. I'm sure Mike Brown, Duke Tobin, and Zach Taylor will appreciate the wisdom that comes from this conversation. Our first category today is free agency. According to overthecap.com, the Bengals rank 6th in cap space. They could create some more by cutting some veterans like Geno Atkins or Bobby Hart, etc. Let's start with high-priced free agents. What expensive free agent each of us would sign if given the opportunity? Lap, I am going to give you the floor first.
I'd probably spend my big dollars on Joe Tooney or Brandon Scherff. One of those offensive linemen that could be a bell cow. You know, everybody talks about how guards, you know, aren't that important. Well, in today's NFL, they've become more and more important. You know, they're important in the run game. And, well, everybody talks about pressure in a quarterback's face. And the depth of the pocket is determined by the play of the guards in center up front. So I think the guards are taking a bigger and bigger role. I mean, everybody's talking about will the Kansas City Chiefs, will their big defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman, get Tom Brady off his spot? Well, you know, that's going to be a key factor in the football game. And how did Joe Burrow's injury occur? It occurred with a guard being bull rushed, you know, in a game against the Washington football team. So, I just think that those guys are proven guys. They're both 28 years old. It's not like they're through playing. They're in the prime of their career. I'm sure it'll be a bidding war. It'll be big dollar. But it would knock one of the big needs off. And again, to me, it starts up front. As great as both these football teams are that are playing in the Super Bowl, and as great as the two quarterbacks are, everybody's talking about, you know, will Kansas City Chiefs offensive line that's so beaten up be able to give Mahomes enough time to operate? Will the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line be able to handle a four-man rush, you know, against Tom Brady? The five sacks that the Chiefs got in the game that they played were all on four-man rushes, you know, against Tampa Bay. So it all comes down to, when push comes to shove, when the rubber meets the road, it's all about, do the guys up front, you know, give their respective teams enough time to operate or no opportunity to operate on the flip side of it. I mean, It's, you know, which offense doesn't need adjustments to help the offensive line and to execute the game plan. And then which defense, you know, will blitz because they want to, not because they have to. And I think that's that always determines football games, no matter how big or how small, and even it's going to determine the Super Bowl.
So this just in, the former guard gives big bucks to a guard.
Yeah.
Hard to argue with either of those guys, although I think Scherf is 29 lap, but your point is the same. They're both under 30. You're not right. Getting a guy on the back nine, so to speak. So two still in their prime guards, Brandon Scherf and Joe Tooney. You would spend your bucks on either one of those two guys. How about you, Butch?
Let's see. Now we get to do later. We can come back with a mid signing and a lower tier signing, right?
Yeah, I have planned one expensive guy and one less expensive guy, basically. So you could divvy up your dollars pretty much any way you want, but I'm thinking each of us is going to pick one of the expensive guys.
I'm going to stay home, and I'm either going to sign Carl Lawson or Will Jackson. And given that they're, depending on what list you look at, they're probably the top free agents at their position. So I tip my hat to Duke Tobin and the scouts, and they were good enough to be number one on, you know, be big on that list. Let's get one of them back, maybe both. You know, Lawson, we're talking maybe 4 years, 50 mil or something. Maybe Will a little bit more than that. But that would be, I guess you can't keep both of them. I may have to go back and get a mid-tier corner or a rusher. But yeah, I think I'd say, and I hear what Lapp is saying,
yeah.
He's right. And, but I'm banking on we already had the big free agent signing there with Frank Pollock.
I'm kind of thinking in my own mind for the purposes of this, Butch, that the Bengals could sign one of those guys and then another expensive guy. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah. I'm being a little conservative because yep. I know the cap is going down.
Yep.
So I know last year they spent on two big guys, right? Waynes and Reeder. So I'd have to go for another big guy. I still don't think I'd go for the guard though. I think I'd go for another corner probably.
Or maybe the answer for you is signing the two Bengals as your two high priced guys, Jackson and Lawson.
That's probably going to be a tough number. That's probably going to be a tough number though. And do they want to come back? That's the other, that's the other thing too. But I think, like I said, I'm banking on them. Hopefully Pollock can turn some of these guys into Joe Tooney, you know? And I think back to 2018, Bowling and Redmond were his guys, I think. And they ran the ball pretty good. Won five at a first, you know, four of the first five, whatever happened before it all went to hell. You know, the offense looked pretty good at that point when Frank had the line. So hopefully some of his magic, we can save money and not have to delve into the guard thing. If I was going to pay a guard, it'd be Lapp.
Yeah.
Lapp would be fine with that.
Yeah.
All right. We will circle back eventually to Jackson and Lawson for me and Lapp, but I will answer this question first before we move on to another one. You know, I thought long and hard about the tackles. Trent Williams is out there, a little bit older than you'd like. He's 33, but he's a great player. A lot of people have mentioned Taylor Moten of the Carolina Panthers. He's in his prime, 27 years old. He's going to be an expensive free agent, no question about it. But I'm with you, Lapp. I'm thinking sign a guard, draft a tackle. It sounds like there are a lot of good tackles in this draft.
Yep.
Obviously, at the top, you've got Penei Sewell. Maybe he will be there at five. But I like the notion of signing Scherf in particular. I think of those two guys, Tooney or Scherf, people seem to have kind of pinpointed Tooney because he's from the Cincinnati area. He's from
Dayton,
and maybe somehow that'll make him want to play here. But when it comes to a high-priced free agent, it's always going to come down to dollars and cents. I would rather spend that kind of money on Scherf because I think over the course of his career, he's been a great player, whereas Tooney has been really, really good. But I think Scherf is great. If I'm going to plop down that kind of money, I want Scherf.
And, you know, the thing that solidified the sure thing with me is he played hurt this year, and he was hurt pretty badly. He was dragging a leg around, and he never missed a snap. I mean, he's one of those guys, rub some dirt on it, get back out there. You know, a guy like him just sets the whole tone. You know, I mean, you have a guy that's the bell cow. He sets the attitude, you know, the whole nine yards. He lifts the whole boat kind of thing. So, I think those are the kind of guys potentially that could make a difference. And I agree with Butch. I think Pollock is going to make a huge difference. And I'm not sure if I'm Frank Pollock, I kind of look at the tape of the current players. And to me, Jonah, his best position may be center. I'm going to throw that out there. Jonah Williams may be the best center they have potentially. I mean, I would play musical chairs if need be. If I'm evaluating the talent that the Bengals have up front now, and now my center's got an ACL, and how quickly he'd be able to return, and how effective. If I had to go a plan B, I may think about even moving Jonah depending on what I get in the draft at the tackle position potentially, and or move other guys out to tackle. I mean, I don't think anything's a given right now. If I'm Frank Pollock, man, I'm looking at everything and anything, and I'm going to try to get the five best guys out on the football field, irrespective of position, you know, and then figure out the position, you know, after the fact. But my five best players are going to be on that damn football field.
So Jonah Williams at center, eight people listening to this podcast in their car just drove off the road. With that even being mentioned, let's move on to a more bargain type free agent, somebody who would be in the mid-range or even at the lower part of the free agency scale. Butch, I'll let you bat lead off on this one.
Mid-tier guy, maybe a defensive tackle, Shelby Harris from Denver, young guy, you know, hopefully one of these guys, you know, they love to get ascending guys. Guys on a second contract, 26, 27 years old. Harris fits that. Just looking at the Pro Football Focus stuff, he's been the last couple of years, he's been one of the top pass rushers out of the three technique, and he's also been very good against the run. He's played only like 500 snaps, I guess, the last couple of years. But they need help. This gets back to why I wouldn't probably go for the guard. I would spend as much money as I can on defense because, and this is bad because the last thing I'm thinking about is the Baltimore game, and I probably shouldn't do that. But, I walk around in a catatonic state and I just can only think defense. But, of course, they were banged up. You know, I mean, obviously that was not what they wanted to send out there. But still, but I think Shelby Harris might be a nice little kind of economic pickup, and maybe just a little bit. A guy who began his career here, would love to see him back, cornerback Troy Hill.
He's been a good Ram.
Yep. Nice career with the Rams. I think he'd probably be a pretty good number two or number three corner, particularly you don't know what they're going to do with Mackenzie Alexander. I don't think he'll be back. Hill can play in the slot, and he can play on the outside too.
All right, Lapp, do you have a bargain free agent in mind?
To me, I think look, what Butch is talking about is another need in my mind. I think offensive line's their primary need. And I think an edge rush guy, a special edge rusher that everyone fears, you know, that can be developed into something like that. You know, you're not going to be able to, I think it's going to be tough to go out and get in the mix with some guys that are out there. I mean, guys like Leonard Floyd from the Rams is out there. Justin Houston, he's out there. Alden Smith has got so much baggage, but watching him, man, he still throws people around. He's 31 years old, but with the addiction issues and things like that, Judon Dupree. I mean, it's going to take money to sign these guys, you know. Any one of those guys would love to get. You know, some of them, you'd make somebody in the division less effective by signing one of their guys potentially. And that always has some great, you know, value to it. But I'm thinking a guy maybe like, you know, the next level guy that might not be as expensive, but was a first round pick coming in that maybe you could develop a little bit is Tack McKinley, you know, from the Las Vegas Raiders. He's out there, you know, he's only 25 years old, you know, and, you know, coming out of UCLA, he was a first round pick. He had a big potential, you know, maybe, you know, maybe they can develop him a little bit. Maybe he can be a guy, you know, coming off the edge that it wouldn't cost huge dollars to go get in terms of others that are on that list that I just talked about that are going to be very expensive, obviously. And that's why I'm not sure if, you know, the money to pay the guard would be as much as it would be to pay an edge rush guy, obviously, or even the next level edge rush guy. I don't know what those economies are going to be. Maybe a guy like that, you know, might fit, but the corner idea is a good one too. You know, Hilton's out there from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not sure Hilton would be, you know, super expensive. His style, he's a great blitzer. You know, that's a big thing that Pittsburgh utilizes him in. It has to be the right fit for the scheme you run as opposed to what Pittsburgh's asking them to do. You have to consider all that, take all that into account and evaluate all that. But, man, through the draft and free agency, if I can find or try to help my edge rush, you know, like Lawson, like Butch was talking about earlier, you know, Lawson or Jackson, if it comes down to one of those two, I'm going Lawson.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. He's the only modicum edge rush guy they have. In my mind, you can't lose that guy. Sign him. And if you can find something else, you know, in free agency that's not all that expensive, yeah. and as well as the draft, offensive line, edge rush are two massive needs in my mind. And then corner and other things come in later.
Tack McKinley was here for about 5 minutes before flunking the physical, but he'll be healthy in time for next year. So theoretically, that could be possible. I was going to save Jackson or Lawson if you could only sign one of them for the next topic, but let's delve into that, and then I'll circle back and give my bargain basement free agent. So Lapp says, if you could only sign one, Lawson or Jackson, his guy is Lawson. My guy would also be Lawson. I just think that he's ascending. The need is greater. I mean, they were the last place sack team in the NFL. So I'd love to have them both back. If I've got to choose one or the other, I'm going Carl. How about you, Butch?
Yeah, no, I agree with Lapp. He's exactly right. You got to keep Lawson and maybe skim a guy, a McKinley. Maybe even, I don't know, Lapp. What do you think about Bud Dupree? Bud Dupree's out there. Does he fit?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mentioned, you know, Bud Dupree, Judon. I think those guys are not going to be bargain basement. I think they're going to get money.
Yeah.
I think those guys are going to command some dollars. Leonard Floyd, like I said, Leonard Floyd, Judon, Dupree.
In a corner, count Trey Waynes. There's your free agent corner.
But if you count him as your corner, you lose Will Jackson, you're even. And then you lose Mackenzie Alexander, you're down two. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have to have three, right. And you better have four, and now you're only talking one.
Yeah, well, it's easy to get there, but like you said, it's easy to get the corner than the edge guy.
I think so, and if I'm going to have a special edge rusher that everybody has to account for and fears a little bit, and it's, you don't need as great a cover guy. I mean, you know, it's easier to take care of the back end, the front end is getting taken care of on a more regular basis and getting the quarterback off the spot and all those things. You know, plus the fact, like you guys said, Carl Loss is 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he hasn't even started his prime yet. He's definitely ascending. The thing about him, I wish he had a little more length. That's the only negative I have on him. He's explosive. He has an unbelievable first step get off. You know, he's powerful. Just not, you know, if he had Sam Hubbard's length, you know, you'd have something really, really unique, but that he doesn't have that. If I'm doing pluses and minuses, that's the only minus in the Carl Lawson evaluation would be lack of length.
Do we assume that Geno will be cut? Do you think that that's likely, Butch?
I don't know. I have a hard feel for that. I don't know. I just it was, it's just weird. It was a weird year with him. You know,
Would it have to be negotiated down from $9 million, whatever he's due to make?
Yeah, like I said, I think that's yet to play out. The other weird thing too is they're not going to know what the cap is until apparently the day free agency starts. So I would think that would be a factor. That would be a factor too. But I would be hard for me to think they're going to have him at the same number.
Yeah, I mean, I would think there'd be a haircut there. You know, it was weird is a good way. Strange is a good way to describe it. I mean, it was a different year for Geno. To get hurt the way he got hurt, warming up for a scrimmage.
You know, but I tip my hat to the guy because I think he could have had surgery, but I think he tried to grind it out, you know.
I think you try to avoid surgery if you can.
Yeah.
But he could have had surgery, but you want to try to avoid. You always, and you don't want to go under the knife unless you really have to. And he didn't want to, and yeah, wanted to try to rehab it, and they were good with that. And in so doing, wearing that big harness and stuff, he was so restricted. You know, he was less than a one arm paper hanger out there. I mean, it's hard to play in the pits with one arm and everybody else has got two good ones. I don't care how talented you are, man. That's almost impossible.
So, I mean, if he's healthy, that's something to, I guess, consider, you know.
Hey, if he's healthy and he's willing to come back at, you know, a third of the price, he's due to make $9.5 million next year. If he would come back for $3 million, something like that. I don't know that you're going to find a free agent pass rusher on the interior that's going to be much better than him, assuming that he's close to healthy, even though, you know, he's going to be old and toward the tail end of his career. So if he would come back at a much lower price, I'd have no problem with that.
You know, and watching him in training camp before the injury, I thought he was poised to have a good year. I mean, he was back to making a lot of noise in pass rush drill. Nobody wanted to go against Geno one-on-one. He was destroying people, you know, and he was the year before, it wasn't like that. But last year's training camp, it was. So it's like, Geno's on the bounce back. And then he gets the damn injury, you know, and it's not like, you know, he just was out in the street. Like we said, he practiced, he did everything he could and played. At least he stayed with it, and he stayed with it physically and mentally to the best of his ability. And I think, too, Geno seems to be the kind of guy that it's a two-way street. I think, you know, the Bengals have obviously – they appreciate what he's done and the level he's played at, and they've compensated him accordingly. And I think he feels gratitude about it. And I think in his mind, he probably like, I own one. You know, if I can do it, I want it to be in Cincinnati. They've been good to me. They've taken care of me. And, you know, I'd like to reciprocate a little bit. I mean, I think he's cut from that cloth a little bit. He seems to be.
Plus, if he stayed in Cincinnati at a reduced figure, he would not have to meet with the media after signing as a free agent with a new team, which we know Geno wants to avoid, right? The other thing about Geno, too, if the Bengals don't bring him back at $9.5 million, which seems unlikely to me, no other team is going to give him a huge amount at his age coming off his injury with his level of play the last couple of years. It's not like he's going to get 9.5 from another team.
Yeah. That's my whole thing is when you guys in Geno's situation and they're, you know, everybody gets to that stage of their career, even with free agency, you know, teams that make a habit of compensating somebody for a decade of excellence with another team, it doesn't work out well economically. You don't get the bang for the buck. You know, whoever signs Geno, it'd be ludicrous for them, foolhardy for them to pay Geno for the great player he was for multiple Pro Bowls with the Cincinnati Bengals, because he's not quite that guy anymore, you know, and you have to proceed accordingly. So yeah, I don't think there's going to be huge dollars out there for Geno. I really don't. I don't think the league will go there.
All right. Are you guys ready for my bargain free agent?
Yes.
All right. So I've already spent huge money on Brandon Scherff with the few dollars I have left, because I've also re-signed Carl Lawson. I've done very well so far in free agency with a few.
Man, we're on the same page. We're on the same page, man.
There you go. We spend so much time together. That was inevitable, Lap. With a few dollars that I have left, I'm going to go out and get a slot corner, because Mackenzie Alexander is a free agent. Yep. I'm just going to assume that he does not go back. So I've been looking over the list of bargain type slot corners that are free agents. I've got two in mind. Brian Poole from the Jets, 28 years old, had good Pro Football Focus numbers last year. He's a little smaller than you'd like. He's 5'9", but he's performed well in the NFL. So he would be one candidate. If for some reason I can't get him, then I move on to Kaywan Williams of the 49ers, 29 years old, another guy who's performed reasonably well as a slot corner in the NFL. I sign one of those two guys for a 2 or 3 years, and I've got that position taken care of.
I got 142 in that mold, maybe Jason Verrett.
I
think he plays a slot.
But he is a slot corner. He's battled injuries throughout his NFL career, but he stayed healthy this year and had a very good year.
Now, I don't know where you'd classify Hilton, but he's out there as well.
My worry with him, though, Lap, is that he's such a blitzer.
Yeah, he is.
Except for Jamal Adams of Seattle, there's no defensive back who blitzes better than Hilton. But I just don't know if the Bengals, you know, scheme would get that out of him the way that the Steelers do with all of their blitzing.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to be able to extrapolate the player from the schematic and say, okay, raw physical abilities other than scheme influence, is he still a guy?
Yeah.
He's not a great tackler, right? I guess that's the other knock on him. But I thought the one thing Mackenzie Alexander did, he can tackle. He will do that.
It was an upset when he didn't get people on the ground. You're right.
And I would have no problem bringing him back. I don't know where that possibility stands, but they're going to have a slot corner. So whether it's bringing him back or signing one of these other guys, that's obviously a position that they have to get taken care of.
Yeah, the one thing we do know is LaShawn Sims, Tony Brown, Jalen Davis, got to upgrade from there.
Lap, is Darius Phillips a slot or an outside guy?
In my opinion, he's more of an outside guy, but I think he can do either. He's got great ball skills. I mean, that's the thing. I think when you have the ball skills that he does, it translates, you know, just about anything, really. Again, I think a slot corner, by the nature of the position, tackling is a big deal. You know, that's a big – and I'm not sure that's his forte.
Yeah, he gets nicked, too. I think that's a problem.
Right. Yeah, durability, yep.
All right, let's move on to the draft. The Bengals obviously have the 5th overall pick. Lap, who are you selecting or what are you doing at the top of the draft?
Well, you know, I do think that if Sewell is there at number 5, he just looks to be, even though, you know, he opted out this year, but 6'5", 330 pounds, 5'40", athletic guy, can move, got real good balance. I just think a guy like that is potentially one of those generational type players. He has that possibility. I would probably go with the offensive line. And if particularly if he were there, if he were not there, I might think otherwise. I might even decide to trade it back, depending on how far back I had to go. And if I still had an offensive lineman or somebody, one of these edge rush guys that, you know, that could make a factor. If I could trade back and get Quiddy Pay, the rush guy from Michigan, if I could trade back and get him and pick up an extra, you know, an extra choice in so doing, I might go that route if he were still, you know, if the problem is you go back, how is there an offensive lineman you'd still be happy with? If there's not, is there an edge guy you'd still be happy with, or a corner, or, you know, what your needs are? But if I were had to stay at 5 and Sewell was there, I probably would go with Sewell.
What do you think, Butch?
I guess Sewell would be the guy, but, you know, the last time they took a tackle out of Oregon, I know it's different, but didn't work out real well. And I'm not – I mean
– Jake Fisher.
The body type on those two
are
so different. You know, one probably – and did end up playing tight end in the league. Yeah. You know, and he was kind of like a blown up to his side. This guy is just a big, old, raw-boned monster. I mean, you know, he's not – I think they're so different in terms of, you know, the physicality aspect, their actual physical structure, you know?
Okay. Now, how do they play? Now, I know guys like Obwehi, when they came in here, they're coming out of a 7-on-7 league. You think he can make that adjustment? You think he can make that adjustment? It's not Chuck and Duck up there, right?
I think pass protection is one of the biggest issues adjusting to the National Football League, you know, a lot of times. And then everybody that's in these spread offenses and these 2-point stances, they're not pass protecting and they're not run blocking.
That's what makes me nervous. That's just what makes me nervous. These guys.
But I just looked at the power aspect of this guy. You're talking about Frank Pollock turning clay into statues, you know, potentially. I mean, I think this guy has a good chance to, under Frank Pollock's guidance, to, you know, to be taught how to play the game at a real high level in the NFL. I really do.
Well, you sold me. Okay, I'll go with Sewell. But I wouldn't mind trading back. I kind of ran through a scenario like this in one of my columns where trade back and maybe – and they should have taken Asante Samuel in 2003 whenever Samuel came out. Now they can get his son, right, maybe if they trade back, so they can rectify that wrong. If I'm not mistaken, they took Dennis Weatherby instead of Asante Samuel. So let's get it right. And then – And then we'll do it, you know, if you trade back. And that's if you think, you know, if Frank likes those young tackles, maybe you trade back and you get a Samuel, get maybe the edge guy from Pitt, Weaver.
Yeah.
Maybe somehow pick off the guard from Alabama, you know, that at the top of the second round with the extra pick.
No Jamar Chase.
I think your guy Samini is going to take. I think Samini's guys are going to take the.
So Rich Samini is the beat reporter who covers the New York Jets. You talked to him for a mock draft earlier today, and he is taking Jamar Chase with the second pick, and correct, the Jets are sticking with Sam Darnold, according to ESPN's Rich Samini.
That's right now, as of that moment. Let's wait 15 minutes. We'll call him back.
I've heard people say that the Jets are going to take Sewell and have two stud tackles,
yeah,
and easier to develop their quarterback no matter who he's throwing it to, because he'll be on his feet, not on his back.
What if you get to five and there's no Chase and there's no Sewell?
Well, let's say you get to five and there's no Sewell. Let's start with that. So Penei Sewell goes somewhere in the top four. Now you're picking five and he's gone. At that point, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, or Rashawn Slater, who most people seem to think is the next best tackle in the draft. What do you think under that scenario?
I think you can trade back and get Slater. I'm not sure I'm sold on Slater as necessarily a top five guy. That might be a little bit of a reach, you know, for me. I got to watch more, but I mean, for me, to take him five when guys like you're talking about, if Chase and people like that are on the board, even though my need, you know, is offensive line in my mind, and people are going to be, oh, what the hell are you taking a receiver at 5'4"? Well, you got a quarterback who they made beautiful music together with, you know, at LSU. The numbers were crazy. You know, he opted out this year, obviously, but his numbers the year before are nuts. Or you know, is there a rush guy? I'm not sure a rush guy, you know, is worthy of the number five. So at that point, I probably do try to trade back. And maybe people that have a different need than I do, if I feel like Chase isn't my guy, you know, there are a bunch of people that jump up and probably take him. So, yeah, that would be an interesting dilemma there, I guess.
Chase does make me think about Chris Henry, Chad Johnson, and T.J. Houshmandzadeh with T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and Jamar Chase. That does get me a little bit nostalgic.
I do think this. If the Bengals were to take Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith with the fifth pick in the draft, you are assuming that they have signed a premier free agent offensive lineman and probably a tackle
before
you could consider a wide receiver at number five. Don't you think they have to have the tackle solved before they can go wide receiver at number five?
I agree with you. I think that is the case. And I would not, as a former lineman, I would not be mad if they did get Scherf and they drafted Sewell. You know, that would not destroy me either. You know, I feel like, man, I've got my offensive line set up for a run for a good long period of time with a coach that I believe in. Feel pretty damn good about that. Now I got to find my edge rush guy that people are going to have to, you know, really fear and consider and everything else that goes along with it. But I mean, yeah, if you could address, the Bengals tried to address that tackle position with back-to-back picks, first and second round that year, and they went 0-for. If you can sign Scherf in free agency and draft Sewell,
yeah,
man, that'd be a, you know, they double down on a, you know, try to, if you're going to address a position, totally address it. They tried, didn't get it done in the draft. If they get one in free agency and then get one as a high pick, top five pick in the draft, you'd hope that they might have that bad boy solved for a while.
If Sewell is there, I'm taking Sewell. I have never wavered on that. I'm not going to waver on it now. I don't care who they signed before him. To me, he's a chance to be your next Anthony Munoz. You know, who knows? He could flop. A lot of the guys do. But just on paper, everything we've read, everybody we've talked to, people seem to think that he is a virtual shoe-in to be a great 10-year offensive tackle in the NFL. If Sewell is there, I'm taking Sewell, but I don't think he's going to be there.
I don't think he's going to be there either. And, you know, when you talk about Anthony Munoz, let's think back to that selection. Half the teams in the league didn't even have him on their board. Bill Parcells wanted to draft him and couldn't. The Giants wouldn't let him do it. So, you know, boy, you talk about a risky pick. But Forrest Gregg, when he came back from California after Anthony Munoz had deposited him on his rear end, when Forrest Gregg was rushing him in a drill, and he said, we got to take this guy. He felt the force and the size of those big old powerful hands on his chest that Anthony delivered and the punch and all that. I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously there's huge questions about the durability of Anthony Munoz. Man, it worked out. Sewell, I think when you have physical freaks, you got to roll the dice on it, man.
So four teams pick ahead of Cincinnati: Jacksonville, the Jets, Miami, and Atlanta. We know Jacksonville is going to take Trevor Lawrence. Of those other three, Jets, Dolphins, Falcons, I don't know if one of those teams will take Sewell or if somebody else will trade up to get Sewell. I just don't think he's going to be there at number five. So here's what I do. And I haven't wavered on this either, Lap. We've talked about this several times on previous podcasts. I am trading down, and I will tell you the team I'm trading with and what I'm getting in exchange. This other team will be happy to know that they're about to make a trade for the fifth pick in the draft. But I am trading down to number 12 with the San Francisco 49ers. I'm looking at the old Jimmy Johnson trade chart. The fifth pick in the draft is worth 1,700 points on the chart. The 49ers pick, 12th overall, is worth 1,200 points on the chart. That's a 500-point difference. Huh? The 49ers' second-round pick, 43rd overall, is worth 470. So that just about evens out the trade chart. Plus, yeah, they've got two fifth-round picks. So the Bengals get their second fifth-round pick, which evens the trade chart. So I'm dropping down seven spots. I'm getting a fairly high second-round pick, top half of the second round. I'm getting an end of the fifth-round pick, and that's my deal. And then with the 12th pick in the draft, I'm taking the best tackle that's left. Because it sounds like Sewell is, at least according to most people, far and away the best. I know some people have started to say that Slater might be just as good or maybe even better. I'm not buying it. Sewell is the guy. But then that next wave, I think there are several guys that are thought to be legitimate top of the first round or middle of the first round type guys. I'm okay with that if I get a high second round pick in addition.
Let me ask you this. Let me riddle you this, Batman.
Yeah.
If Sewell's gone.
Yep.
And the 49ers say, okay, yeah, we'll make the trade. And then they don't. And you're stuck with the fifth pick.
Yeah. You know, at that point, I'm okay with one of those wide receivers. I mean, yeah, I'd love to have Ja'Marr Chase or Devontae Smith. Who wouldn't? I'm certainly not going to be unhappy. But I'm just, if Sewell is there, I want Sewell. Other than that, you know, the Bengals have enough needs that if I could drop down to no lower than 12 and get a decent second round pick as well, I'm making the move.
That was my trade I did. I took Patrick Surtain at 12, Rashad Weaver with the 38th pick, and then at 43. All right.
Okay, you guys, everybody you're talking about, Sewell, Slater, Surtain, letter S is big in this draft, man. Trading back and getting somebody whose last name starts with letter S, it's big.
Not based on that reasoning, but all of those players are definitely good. Devontae Smith, did you have him as well? That's another S.
That's another S. That's right.
Does Smith kind of worry you? He's a little, he's an undersized speedster. Taking him in the first round. Is that?
I'm just worried about durability. That's the only thing that concerns me. He's like a 170-pound guy in this league. I mean, I'm sure he'll put on some weight, but as great as he is, that is the concern.
And speed is not, it's not like unusually like Olympic. He's got good speed. He's so fluid with his routes. He's an unbelievable route runner. But, you know, you look at him and you say, man, he's one good lick away from being in trouble. That is the thing, the thing with him. I mean, his teammate Waddle is bigger and faster guy, you know. But Alabama, they utilized him so well, you know. But at some point in the NFL, you got to catch the ball in traffic somewhere. And will he be able to survive that? That's got to be the big concern with him.
All right, gentlemen, are you ready for some questions that were submitted via Twitter?
Let's do it.
All right, Butch, you sit in on the Hall of Fame meetings, so I will direct Kyle's question to you. How is Willie Anderson's Hall of Fame bid coming along?
I think it was a real shot in the arm this last year by getting into the final 25 was huge. But I was stunned that he didn't make it to the 15 because I had made calls and all the voters I talked to, and I didn't talk to all of them, but I talked to several, they think he's fit to be a finalist and to go into the room and to be talked about. So I think I'm encouraged by him getting into the 25. I wish he had got into the 15, but I think he will. And I do think once he gets into the room, when he gets into the room, he'll be discussed. There'll be a presentation of him, and then people will have a back and forth on him. And I think once his case is made crystal clear for a year or two, I think he'll get in.
You know, the thing about Willie, and we know this because we've been around him, but all the physical attributes are obviously apparent. You watch it on tape. But the one thing you can't necessarily see on tape, you might be able to if you really study, you know, a lot of situations where, you know, defenses are trying to confuse offensive lines and all that. Willie has a beautiful football mind. Willie Anderson, man, he's sharp as a whip in terms of understanding the game of football, big picture. And, you know, normally tackles just kind of tunnel visioned on the defensive end and block the end. His eyes were always everywhere, man. Willie Anderson understood the game of football big time. I mean, his mental capacity for the game of football is as good as his physical capacity, man. It was incredible.
13 holding penalties in 13 years, I think.
Pretty strong.
It's because he intimidated the officials. Who was going to throw a flag on Big Willie? Come on.
You know, the thing, he was so damn good, he didn't have to cheat. You know, he applied his technique, he was going to kick everybody's ass. And he didn't have to grab, you know. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. Trust my technique, as they say. And he trusted his technique, and he was so good physically. And his technique was so good. I mean, he is just an example. Boy, you watch Willie play.
All right, similar question submitted by KB and by Joe. Would the Bengals even consider tight end Kyle Pitts with a 5th overall pick? What do you think, Lap?
Boy, I'll tell you, at number 5, I think that's a little bit rich to consider, you know, the tight end position. I mean, you know, Kelsey is, in my mind, the best route-running tight end in the National Football League. You know, they can do all the comparisons they want, you know, who's the – biggest weapon. Obviously the quarterback is a big factor and all that, but just if you put on tape and watch Kelsey run routes compared to other tight ends of his size in the National Football League, it's not even close. he's just unbelievable. And the tight end he's a tight end like this kid can be an influencer. There's no question about it. I do think the Bengals offense suffered when CJ Uzomah was lost for the year. I think that's something that kind of gets forgotten a little bit because he was definitely their best threat as a receiver at the tight end position. I think he's going to come back 100%. But taking a tight end at the fifth spot, I don't know. To me, that's just a little bit too rich. Even if this kid's really good, there's no doubt about it, but I'm not sure I'd pull the trigger with the other needs the Bengals have.
Yeah, I don't think they would. I don't think they would take him even if they traded back.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. The fifth pick in the draft. I mean, maybe if you trade back and you're somewhere in that 12 to 15 range and he's somehow still there, maybe you would consider it. But, you know, he's more of a receiving tight end than a George Kittle, Rob Gronkowski type that's a great blocker at the line of scrimmage. If you're at number five and you're going to take a receiver, take a receiver. Not the best receiving tight end. I mean, I love Kyle Pitts. I'd like to have him, but I'm not taking him fifth overall.
Yeah, I agree. I think if the Bengals trade back to, you know, beyond 16, 15, 16, you know, the middle of the first round, I think they start to think about it. But if they traded back to, like, San Francisco or your deal at 12, I'm not sure I'd take him at 12. You know, it's like, I don't know. You'd have to see what else is on the board. But I agree with your thought process. If there's a receiver there, take the damn receiver, no doubt.
Question from Bengals Truth. Does the organization feel Frank Pollock can fix their current offensive line?
I think that they have a strong belief in Frank Pollock. Obviously, Joe Mixon does, and that's a big factor. And that, I guess that's the thing. I know that the offensive linemen that were here when Frank Pollock was here the first time are excited about Frank Pollock's return, and other players that were here when Frank Pollock was here the first time are excited about Frank Pollock's return. And Joe Mixon, obviously the biggest, most vocal one of those. And I think that's good and unusual in some ways. I can understand the linemen, you know, having that kind of a feeling for their coach, but he had an impact on a lot of guys. That speaks a lot about not only Frank Pollock, the offensive line coach, but Frank Pollock, the coach in general and the person, you know, and the, you know, ability to form relationships and get the best out of people and to get people to believe in what you're doing and to trust you, you know, and have confidence in all those things. I think Frank Pollock is going to do really good things here for the Cincinnati Bengals. I totally believe that.
I've never seen a player give a touchdown ball to a coach on the other team.
And the coach on the other team take it. Yeah. You know, getting back to the question, does the organization think Frank Pollock can fix the current offensive line? He's not going to be asked to fix the current offensive line. There are going to be changes. He's not going to line up with Bobby Hart at right tackle and, you know, Alex Redmond at right guard. I mean, some of these guys could be back, don't get me wrong, but there are going to be changes and additions as well. And then they are going to be counting on Frank Pollock to maximize whatever group he's given.
I agree. And like I said before, I would not shock me if Frank shuffles a little bit. It wouldn't shock me at all. Who knows? But Frank, you can't expect Frank to bring a big wand in here, wave the magic wand, and make the players that were playing in the Bengals offensive line the last couple of years a top five offensive line in the NFL. That dog ain't happened, boy. That dog's been dead a while.
Question from Bearcat Joe and a question from Dr. Houday. These are tied together. What are the chances of bringing A.J. Green back on a one-year deal? That was Bearcat Joe. Dr. Houday, what are realistic landing spots for A.J. Green? What do you think, Butch?
You know, somebody's going to offer him a good deal, I think. I mean, probably not, you know, not mega, but I'm sure somebody's going to be out there who's going to offer him more than a one-year deal, I would think. I mean, I'd love to have him back. I mean, I think it would be great. I think it'd be great for the team. It'd be great for the city. It'd be great for Burrow. You know, is that in the cards? I just don't know. You know, I mean, I guess, and where I'm not sure where his landing spots would be. I mean, you know, probably for a team that's looking for the final piece, something to put him over the top. I don't think he'd be going to a team that's rebuilding, but you know, I'd love to see him stay here as, you know, just to help Joe continue the progression. But you know, that's, you know, I'm not, you know, that's usually for fables, and I, you know, yeah. I'd love to see it come true, though.
Yeah, we'd all love to see him back just because we love the guy. But just everything he said and his body language at the end of the year indicated that he's ready to move on. So I think he will. I could see him going to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Veteran quarterback, Matt Ryan, it's home. Julio Jones is a friend. They were drafted, you know, basically next to each other back in 2011 in the draft. That one would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, me and Julio.
Down at the schoolyard.
Down at the schoolyard in Hotlanta. That'd be AJ's big deal. I thought the same thing, Dan. You know, it's like go back to the state where you made your name. You know, family down there, the whole nine yards. It'd be a graceful way for him to put out on the back nine. Honestly, when Butch, you were saying, yeah, you know, boy, you draft a guy like Chase and you get Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. I was hoping it was going to be Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and A.J. Green.
Yeah.
I was totally surprised last year that he did not have a higher win rate ratio. Yeah. He just, you know, didn't get open as much as I thought he would. You know, in watching him the year before when he didn't play at all, you know, running on grass up in Cleveland. And it just goes to show you that, man, even though you're running – routes, change of direction, all that. It's not football. You know, it's not pads on, guys covering you, getting their hands on you, doing all those kind of things. The game is different. Playing the game is different. You can look like an All-American in dummy football when it's, you know, shorts and T-shirts. Yeah. But, man, you put the pads on and play football, it's a different dynamic. So I was very surprised that, you know, that he had so many games that were as non-productive as they were. Watching him – and even at training camp, I thought, yeah, he still, you know, run some good routes. But it wasn't live football, you know. And that's the interesting thing. And like you said, Butch, somebody might offer him something multi-year for a lot less. You wonder if the Bengals would do that, just yeah. to have presence and have him around and doing the kind of things. Because, I mean, to a man, every player, every coach, nobody. Has a negative thing to say about AJ Green. It's incredible. That guy is as well-liked and well-respected a football player. I mean, he is literally in the Anthony Munoz caliber. Nobody had anything negative to say about Anthony Munoz, not just because of the great player, but the great human being. And that, you know, AJ Green's in that stratosphere, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting and difficult to, you know, almost think like, yeah, I was saying goodbye to AJ Green.
But, you know, very, very tough. And I wonder if the referee had kept his flag in the pocket against the charges.
Yeah.
What kind of year would it have been for him? I think it would have been, you know what the stories would have been? AJ never left. He took over the game. He won the game. So, it was a perfect storm. You kind of forget. He missed 24 games. My God, that's a lot of time. But then you throw in the fact a rookie quarterback, a pandemic, and a new offense. That's a lot of waves in the ocean, you know? You just kind of underestimated it. In my mind, I underestimated all that.
You look at the official throwing the flag on such a great player. You know, a lot of times officials kind of like benefit of the doubt goes to great players. And, you know, confidence is a delicate thing. And AJ is one of those guys that really, you know, feeds off confidence and everything. You wonder how big a blow that was, you know?
Yeah, I really think it.
He takes everything to heart, man.
Yeah, I think the whole thing, you know, maybe I'm being a half full guy, but I do think things change.
It'll be interesting to see if he goes elsewhere, if his numbers increase significantly from this year where he only had 500 some receiving yards. I can think of one person that does have negative things to say about AJ Green. That would be Jalen Ramsey from those haymakers that he threw a few years ago when they got into it back when Ramsey was with Jacksonville.
John Harbaugh, a close second.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that'd be another one. That's a good point. All right. One more Twitter question, and then we're going to wrap up with the Super Bowl from Greg. Will the Bengals address wide receiver in free agency or the draft? They've got to, right? They're going to add bodies at that position.
I just, if there's one thing that scares me, it's free agent veteran wide receivers. It just seems like it's always a tough fit. Now, I guess they'll probably have to go grab a guy. But that always seems to be, you know, I can't, you know, you can count on your fingers how many times it's worked here, you know. I guess it has in the past.
Well, Greg said free agency or the draft.
Oh, I think the draft, I mean, clearly.
Definitely, yeah. I think they're definitely going to have to address the position in the draft. Free agency, you are, I mean, you almost wonder if the draft isn't fruitful and you're looking at free agency, where does AJ Green stack up in terms of free agency with, you know, is, okay, do we even think about readdressing AJ Green a little differently with respect to guys that might be out there and what kind of options are left? It's kind of, that'll be interesting.
I think AJ is ready to move on even more than the Bengals are thinking of moving on from AJ. It just sounded to me at the end of the year like he was ready for a fresh start.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, Dan. I think to me, his body language and the way he addressed everything, he seemed tired, you know? It was like almost time. I agree. Yep.
And that's okay. You know, he gave him 10 great years. I hope he goes somewhere else and thrives in the final stages of his career. All right, let's move on to Super Bowl Sunday. Buccaneers, Kansas City Chiefs. Who do you got and why? Butch, we'll let you go first.
Tampa 31-28 at the gun.
Whoa.
I think it's going to be Brady is going to become Eli Manning. I think he's going to beat the Brady of his era, Mahomes, or like Brady about to ascend. He's going to beat him. He's going to beat the Brady of this time. He's going to do it with Kansas City. He's going to they won't be able to get to him, and he's going to kill him with the blitz. Gronkowski, the MVP, could be Rob Gronkowski or Cameron Brate. Tight end. I think he's going to
come
kill
on. Cameron Brate might catch a touchdown pass. He is not going to be the Super Bowl MVP.
I see Fournette taking the air. I see Fournette and the other back taking the air out of the ball.
Cameron Brate is the MVP, I will post this clip on like an endless loop to make you look good. Because that would be one heck of a call. I don't know what the prop bet is for Cameron Brate being the MVP of the Super Bowl, but you could make big money if you put something down and that turned out to be true. So
probably right this.
Which likes the Bucks? 31-28, did you say?
Yes.
At the gun. Ryan Suckup with a field goal or a touchdown pass by Brady to Cameron Brate to win it in the final seconds on his home field. All right, Lap, how about you?
All right, well, Brady is 33-11 in his playoff career. He's 18-0 when he has a plus turnover ratio. 18-0. Wow. So 15-11 when he's even or minus. So, I mean, turnover is going to be big, like they always are. And Brady, man, in the playoffs, 18 times he didn't have a turnover? The football team he led? That's pretty phenomenal. So, you know, I start to think about Tampa Bay because – I talk about the offensive line with Kansas City. They got four different starters, four new guys. The only guy that's the normal starter is the center. They have Mike Remmers playing offensive line at the tackle position. The last Super Bowl he played in was with the Carolina Panthers, and he was playing against Von Miller, the Denver Broncos. Von Miller had three sacks, won Super Bowl MVP. Remmers was a turnstile. And to this day, he can't get over how bad he was in that football game. You know, and I'm looking at what will JPP and Shaq Barrett, who's Shaq Barrett's a free agent, by the way, what will those guys do on the edge? You know, I mean, without Fisher, Mahomes is 3-3 in games played without Eric Fisher in six games. So you start to think, man, you know, is Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, does that look like, you know, will David and White at linebacker negate Kelsey a little bit, in my opinion? The best route runner at tight end in football. But then I look at Mahomes, and Mahomes in the playoffs averaging over 10 yards rushing when he scrambles, 17 scrambles in the playoffs in the short playoff history, 177 yards. That's not to mention scrambling around, throwing the ball all over the place. I just, I look at Patrick Mahomes and I just think, man, the dude's a magician. You know, he, even when he falls behind by a big number, he'll come back, whether it's Super Bowl or not, you know, I mean, playoff game or not. I just can't rule that guy out. It's the first time in Super Bowl history the two quarterbacks that won the last two Super Bowl faced Super Bowls prior to the game they're playing and face off against each other. And one's on the back nine and one's just starting, man.
That's the one thing that worries me about my pick, obviously, is Mahomes, because when Brady got beat, the Giants went up the middle on him. You know, they were at his feet. The Giants were at his feet. And I think Tampa can do that. I think Tampa has a good enough front, but Mahomes will just laugh if they're at his feet. He'll move out of the pocket. He'll throw behind his back. He'll throw it under his legs. So while Tampa may play at a great defense, it's not going to matter because Mahomes is so good.
He hasn't thrown behind his back yet. That might be the one thing he hasn't done. So we'll look forward to that. So who's your pick, Lap?
Well, here's the other thing. The defensive tackles for the Kansas City Chiefs, Clark and Jones, good tandem. They're going to get Brady off his spot. That four-man rush. Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, is 3-2 against Brady. And, of course, the big Super Bowl when you're talking about with the Giants. Four-man rush, pressure right in Brady's face. Doesn't deal with pressure in the face. So I'm going 31-30 Mahomes. I'm going a barn burner, and I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs and Mahomes winning back-to-back Super Bowls. I think it's going to be a hell of a game.
So I get to break the tie. This is good. I am picking Kansas City. Here is my rationale. The Chiefs have punted once in two playoff games this year. Patrick Mahomes has 9 losses as the starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. You know what the opponent has averaged in those 9 games? 36 points.
Wow.
You got to score a ton to beat Patrick Mahomes. Yep. I think the Bucs are going to score 27, but it's not going to be enough. 31-27, Kansas City. I also like Andy Reid over Bruce Arians. I think Bruce Arians is a fine coach, but he's not going to the Hall of Fame. Andy Reid is, and I'm going with KC. Left tackle does concern me with Fisher going down in the AFC Championship game. That's the one thing that really scares me, but I will go with Kansas City.
And Remmers is going from right to left tackle, and they get a backup to the backup at right tackle. That offensive line is scary, but Mahomes is crazy. But I agree with you. Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, I'll take over Bruce Arians and Leftwich, Byron Leftwich. I'll take the tandem in terms of points, producing points with Kansas City over the tandem with Tampa Bay.
We all have our winning team scoring 31 points, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And if Tampa Bay comes out on top, you will have the last laugh on Sunday night, Butch.
I'm looking for Cameron Braid at the parade.
All right, gentlemen, this has been fun. I hope our audience enjoyed it as much as I did. And look forward to laughing as we watch the Super Bowl on Sunday night.
I hear you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I enjoyed it.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.